Hallo?
Hören Sie? Hallo? Hallo? Hören Sie? Ach, super.
Okay. First thing, I told the people last night as I was preparing for these courses, this is the fourth maybe time I've taught Lojong, developing the good heart. And I was going over the nice, I started reviewing 10 days ago maybe. And it was like the first time I'd ever seen the material. My ideas of what it's about had changed that much since I last taught it. So I thank you very much for inviting me here to teach this. And I hope some of my new discoveries could get passed on to you. The important thing to take away from that, though, is that learning the path is a lifelong effort. It isn't that you come and take 15 courses and you're done. That's not the way it goes. That's sort of the beginning.
You know, it'll take you 6-7 years to do that. And if you decide to continue with Tantra, after that, there's another 6 years, maybe 7 years. And then you can sort of start to really practice. The three people that did the three-year retreat in Arizona, some of them got to the point where they'd actually mastered the visualizations and ideas that you do in a retreat for beginning Tantra. But that only allowed them to really start practicing. And they've been students for 25 years. So things change. If your practice doesn't change, you're not practicing. You know, I've already told you, if things don't go to hell in a handbasket when you start to practice, you're not doing it right. Yeah. There's a young man in Sedona who's been going through, he doesn't know what, you know, and he travels to India to help with ACIP, and then he goes on DCI tours and stuff like that, and he's generally just has no idea what's happening to him, but he sticks with it, you know, you got to do that. I read a book this year called The Road to Character. It was written by a columnist for the New York Times. David Brooks is his name. And he's a conservative Republican. Well, not conservative. He's a Republican, but kind of moderate. But he's also very, very smart and very caring. And I heard about the book in a radio interview that he was doing with somebody. And this guy was saying, you know, that, you know, he's a professor. He has students in college. He writes a column for the New York Times. He's a pundit on TV twice a week. You know, people look up to him to sort of interpret the world and what's going on and maybe what they should do. And he said, I asked myself, am I that person? And he said the answer was no. So he decided to find out, you know, what developing character really meant. And he spent 3 or 4 years kind of researching and wrote this book called The Road to Character. And each chapter takes a person, sometimes two, but mainly one person, and looks at their life. And they weren't born with what they became. They had to go through some difficult times to get there. But they all did it, you know. Some of them started in their 50s. Some of them had really difficult childhoods, and that just kept going on through their life until they finally reached a point where they felt they could do with it and help. And they always used their experiences to help other people. And that's what he was called character, you know. Can you take your own problems and turn them into benefit for somebody else? It was really a wonderful book. The first four people were people I'd never heard of. The first lady was a widowed socialite in New York City in 1870, maybe something like that. And then it went on from there. The only really ancient one was Constantine. St. Augustine, who was born in Africa. I didn't realize that. Northern Africa. Finally got to Italy. But he didn't become a monk until he was 50, 55, something like that. And he really fought delving into religion, even though he was in it. But you could always see that he was looking, what's the right thing to do? You know, for me, what's the right thing to do? So, oddly enough, that's what we're going to be talking about the next 2 weekends. You know, what's the right thing to do and how do I help others? And I've got to apply what I know to help them, and I've got to do certain things to change myself to be able to do that. Now, for a lot of you, I'm going to be preaching to the choir, as we say in the U.S., you know. But hang in there anyway. You wouldn't be here if you didn't really already have a good heart. But, you know, we'll see what happens on that. I haven't drunk my coffee. How is this going to work? Here we go. Say Lojong.
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 Lo means mind. I've already, in most classes before, the word we've used for mind has been sem. But now it's lo. What's the difference? The difference is that lo indicates it's more along the line of intellect or what the mind knows or what it does, as opposed to just being the general mind that sort of functions as a mind, right? And zhong means to purify or to clean. It's related to zhang, which is used sometimes to describe a Buddha, which is a purified or awakened being. Now, cleaning the mind, all right, well, that's not bad. Another translation of zhong is to develop or make it, or train even. So in English, this is often translated as mind training, less often as mind development. But Geshe-la was the first one to do developing a good heart. Why? Well, several Tibetan commentators talk about the term, you know, developing a mind. We've got a mind. You know, what's there to develop? Training the mind. Haven't we been doing that since we were born? And so on. But what does it really mean? And the thrust of all of the Lojong texts is to get us in our love and compassion to a point where we turn our concern to others instead of ourselves. That's it. Others come first. We're second, always. We give everything we can to the people, including Dharma. Help. One of the things we give is protection from fear. When that comes about, all of you here are someday going to be teachers. This is really a teacher training course. I don't know whether you knew that. I've said that before, so some of you already know it, right? And in order to do that, you need this attitude that you'll do whatever needs to be done, just like that. You know? Tara, who I've talked about, she sits on her cushion with her right leg out on the ground. She's ready to get up as soon as you call her, just like that. I'll be there. You know, that's the kind of thing. So this attitude, a good word for it is the good heart. You know, it's not the mind, it's the heart down here. I told the people last night, when you ask an Asian where the heart is, they're going to point here, not up here. It's down here. And this is the thing. It is the mind that motivates all this, all right? But what we think about heart usually has to do with love. And that's precisely where these trainings come in. So we are going to be studying, I think, 6 texts, maybe. And they're all from one big book called Kadampa Geshe Longri Kangpa Dorje Senge Tse Lojong Tsikye Ma. What does all that mean? Kadampa were the early monks in Tibet. They're basically descended from Lord Atisha's followers, immediate followers. They were very, very strict in their observance of monk rules, but also of Dharma. So they would be, this was around 900, 1,000, something like that. They would have been very comfortable in Jetsongkhapa's disciples. They were fierce Dharma warriors. Geshe means spiritual friend. And in the sense of these texts, when we see the word Geshe, it's going to mean spiritual friend. Geshe now is also the name of the degree you get from a monastery when you've completed the Geshe studies. It's like a PhD. But back then, it was just a spiritual friend, somebody that you could rely on to help you. So a teacher, right? Longri is a place, and Tangpa means plains. Senge means lion. It's related to Simba in Africa, which is the name of a lion someplace in a movie I think I saw. And Singha, Singha beer in Thailand is lion beer. So Senge is the Tibetan version of lion. And Dorje means diamond. So this guy's name was Diamond Lion. Tse means simply wrote or composed. Lojong we talked about. Tsik means a word or a phrase, but here it refers to verse. Ye means 8, and ma is a feminine ending. Feminine endings added to abstract things indicate wisdom. The Heart of Wisdom Sutra, for example, has ma at the end. It's a sutra on wisdom. So feminine endings, if they're abstract or applied to women, means wisdom. Okay. So this is the 8 verses on developing the good heart, written by Diamond Lion from the plains of Longri. And he was a Kadampa Geshe and a spiritual friend. And that's a better version than the thing I just sort of stammered out. Okay. This text is from a collection called A Compendium of Texts on Developing the Good Heart. It was written by Muchen Krunchuk Gyaltsen, 14th century. The text started around 900, late 900s maybe, and they were finally put into a book in the 14th century. Many of them were secret. They were passed down, whispered from teacher to disciple. We're going to talk about this toward the end of the, we're going to cover this text in two classes. So the end of the class tomorrow, tomorrow morning, we'll talk about why it might have been secret. All the texts we're studying are from this compendium. Now, we're going to be using some commentary from a writer called Chankya Rinpoche. He lived 1642 to 1714. His Tibetan name is Jangchup Semjong. Is that right? No. Jangchup Semjong is what he used to describe Bodhicitta. It's usually Jangchup Sempa. A Bodhisattva is a Jangchup Sempa. The pa part means warrior. All right. Sempa is a warrior of the mind, I guess. And Jangchup part is enlightenment. So the normal term is Bodhisattva warrior, a warrior for enlightenment, a warrior working for enlightenment. Who are they fighting? Their mental afflictions, their own mental afflictions. Which, by the way, is what jihad is too. It's not the contemporary understanding. The jihad is fighting your own mental afflictions. The infidel is those mental afflictions. It's not anything else. Traditionally. All right. Chankya Rinpoche was in a line of three or four reincarnations, all called Chankya Rinpoche. They taught the emperors of China. They sat in Beijing and taught the emperors of China for three generations, something like that. There was a recent reincarnation of the Chankya Rinpoche line, but when he was born, there were already problems developing between the Chinese Empire and the Empire. So he changed his name. His name was changed for him, actually, when he was a little, Pabanka Rinpoche. Pabanka Rinpoche is the writer of the Lam Rim that Geshe has been teaching for the last 87 years or something. Seven, maybe, right? I don't know.
A little bit less. Ten.
We just had the 20th class, the 20th course in Mexico, and we're not halfway through. So, which is a good time to plug that retreat. If you can get to one of these retreats, it's incredible. Geshe-la says that the Pabanka Rinpoche's book, Liberation Thrust into the Palm of Your Hand, is the greatest book written in Tibet. And the longer I take these courses, yeah, he's absolutely right. Okay, so this is going to, we're going to be looking at Chankya Rinpoche's commentary a lot. I don't know how much of it is in your reading. I know there's not much of it for the eight verses, because you really don't need much, but that's all right. So, without further ado, we just happen to have, through the great kindness of somebody present, the translation into German.
Und Christa. Danke, Christa.
All right, here is where I have to go to my notes, which I wanted to put on here, but I can't yet. So rather than have you get confused with all the stuff on the text. Let's look at them here. So what do we have? May I think of every living being as more precious than a wish-giving gem. What's a wish-giving gem? It's sort of like Aladdin's lamp, really. I just had this. Where did it go? There we go. A wish-giving gem will give you whatever you want. So you find Aladdin's lamp, you rub it three times, and genie comes out. Yes, may I help you? And you ask him something, and okay, and there it is. Usually with strings attached, or not quite what you really wanted. There are ancient scriptures that describe how you find a wish-giving jewel, and then how you use it. Basically, you have to look in muck. Muck is like the muddy corner of a cow pasture or a pen, pig pen, you know, where they crap. And it's mixed with straw and everything like that. It can be just mud. But it's really, muck the sound is very close to what muck really is. So you look for it in muck. And you'll just search around there and you pick up something. Wish-giving jewel. And then you wash it very carefully and you rub ointment on it. And you wrap it in silk. And then you place it on top of a pole. You know, flag poles often have a ball on top. It's like that. And you put it up there. And then you do rituals around it. And if everything goes well, then the jewel will give you whatever you wish for. And this verse says that the people around us are more precious than that wish-giving jewel. What are we going to wish for? It's going to be most often material things, which aren't going to help us a bit. I mean, temporarily they make us happy. You know, you buy the latest new clothes and they're really nice for 10 days and then you're bored with them, right? Maybe it lasts 10 days, something like that. But the people around us are much more important than that wish-giving gem, because we can actually reach enlightenment. And he's going to tell us why that is true. So there are three ways to read this verse. The first one is sort of like, you know, we cannot even think about, conceive what it would be like to actually reach enlightenment. We really have no idea what that would be. People says, you want to reach enlightenment? Oh, yeah. Me too. Tell me about it. You know, we can't even conceive what it would be like. You know, even when some advanced tantrika tells us what enlightenment might be like, due to their own experience practicing tantra, we won't know what they're talking about. We just don't have that kind of experience. That's one reason tantra is called secret, by the way. If you don't have the empowerments and the study, mainly the empowerments to understand it, you cannot. Somebody can tell you all the secrets, you won't have an idea what they mean. People who read secret texts these days, mainly, tantric sex, right? It'll kill you. Just don't do that. It's secret. It's powerful. The reason you can get enlightened in one lifetime is that tantra is extremely powerful. It's one lifetime as opposed to three countless eons practicing the open teachings. So there's got to be something there that is amazing, right? To To get tantric enlightenment, for example, means that you achieve a body of light. You look at this thing, and it's no longer some skin with maybe some hair on it, liver spots and things like that. It's light. That is your body, and that's what you perceive. That's what being a tantric angel means. Your perceptions change, and it's no longer sticks and some flesh and skin. It's light. And when you get that, you can get it before becoming a Buddha, but you're very, very close. And when you become a Buddha, that becomes your enjoyment body, the one you kind of walk around in all the time. And, I mean, what would that be like? We I know. If I had a light body, I couldn't type in my computer. Well, maybe, maybe not. You know? But we'd never think of anything like that. So, in order to get that body, we have to do it with other people. We need to plant the seeds for our light body, which means we have to do actions to generate the karma. Karma is generated in relationship to other people. You can't sit in the cave and get enlightened. You've got to do it with other people. Well, some people, well, look at Buddha. He didn't use other people. Well, he was already a Buddha when he came here. No, he went through the charade of getting enlightened in order to teach us what that might be like and then what we have to do. But he says, you know, in his birth stories of all the stuff he went through, there are 1,600 tales about him before he was a Buddha, as a Bodhisattva, right? All the mistakes he made. And he always told them in the context of something that was going on with somebody, or maybe a group of monks or something like that. And he said, well, you shouldn't do this. And he'd go off in the story. There once was, you know, he did this and so and wound up in the hell realms for 2 million years. I was that monk. You know, don't do that. that kind of story. They read like children's stories. And in fact, you can read them to your kids. They're 1 to 3 pages long, something like that. So we learn how to relate to these other people properly in order to get the good karma that we need to get an angel's body. We have to learn how to do that. We're not born naturally knowing how to do that, unless we're very advanced people. And you may all be, for all I know. So maybe I'm just teaching myself here, which is fine. I'm very happy to do that. As I said, it looked like new stuff, you know. But we have to learn how to do that. That's developing the good heart. How do I relate properly to, not just to friends, but to everybody else? In other words, how do I hold them in my heart? How can I make them friends instead of enemies? All right. And you need difficult people around you in order to do that. It's not hard to like a friend, you know. I mean, you don't get any points for liking a friend. If you do good things for them, yeah, that's good too. But it's not a difficult thing to do. The thing that really changes us, that develops the character that David Brooks was talking about in that book, is learning how to consider other people in good ways. Learning how, what a schmuck you are, usually, to these other people. You may not think that. We were talking last night about exchanging self with others. You put your mind in their mind to look back at you, and maybe they don't like you at all. You know, I mean, you don't like them, they don't like you. I mean, what's so difficult about that, right? But we have to change that. We need to do good actions to all other people, which means we do it joyfully. Otherwise, the karma is not strong enough and we just spin our wheels. So that's kind of one way that we can look at this verse. Second way, we need to reach a state of mind called bodhicitta, real bodhicitta, you know. And that bodhicitta itself is more precious than a wish-giving gem. Why? Because it's going to guide our actions and lead us to enlightenment. And then the third way is Buddhahood itself is many, 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 many times more precious than a wish-giving jewel. So he's sort of starting off by telling us, yeah, think of every living being as more precious than a wish-giving gem. Living beings aren't limited to humans, by the way. Horses and pigs and ants, whatever it is, they're all living beings, and we have to learn how to see them and act for them appropriately. Okay, so these three different meanings come from ways that we parse this Tibetan verse. They're not obvious in the English translation. But maybe this German translation is a little more accurate. Or maybe you could actually learn Tibetan, and for some of you are, and come up with something. You look at the Tibetan, and this was the best thing Geshe-la could come up with in the translation. The Tibetan language is basically a language of sheep and yak herders. But yet it became the language of discourse of the most advanced philosophical discussion in the history of the planet, even more than the Enlightenment in Europe. Even more so than the incredibly wonderful philosophy that was going around in Germany, 1800s. It's amazing through this very simple language. But they use, I hate sheep herding terms, you know, to discuss these things. And it seems to get down to a deeper thing all the time. It would be like the parables, you know, in the New Testament. They don't mean what they say. They mean something much, much different. And you have to be kind of sophisticated to understand that. But it can be done if you take the time to study. Okay, it's easy to read this verse as a metaphor. But it ain't. You know, people around us are much more important than a wish-giving jewel. It's that simple. It's not a metaphor. Okay, verse 2. Which you have here, right? When I'm with another, wherever we are, may I see myself as the lowest. I hold other as highest in the bottom of my heart. By the way, these texts are very short. We're going to have a four-line, one-verse text next weekend, I think it is. There's a seven-point mind training. They're brief. We're going to get one of the last, which I don't think we're going to go over, but it's in your reading. It's fairly simple. And then there's a 119 verse one, which we'll spend two classes on, which also gives a number of karmic correlations. You got a headache? This is what caused it. Don't do it in the future. You know, people take things from you. This is what caused it. Don't do it in the future. That kind of stuff. In the ACI series, the course before this was course 13, which is a course on logic. 300 very difficult pages. And the reading in this, I think the total of the commentary is 90 pages, something like that, and 6 different texts. This is from the heart. We're developing the good heart. So these texts are speaking from the heart. It's not so much logic, even though there's a lot of logic involved. But you've already had that in Course 13, so we're applying it now. Why are we getting these beautiful teachings at the end of all the courses? Because Geshe-la has been preparing us to be able to understand them deeply and to understand why we have to transform ourselves. He's told us we've had to do that continually. Well, Lord Buddha's been telling us, but Geshe-la has been echoing him, you know. And now we're understanding how actually we're going to do that. Okay, so when I'm with another, wherever we are, may I see myself as the lowest. This is not an exercise in low self-esteem. You are not to see yourself as ineffectual or whatever, depressed. That's not the point of this thing. According to scripture, there should be a few enlightened beings sprinkled around us, even in this room. And we have to learn to think like that. Out on the street, at work, wherever we are, there are some enlightened beings there that have emanated to help us. We have to ask for it, but they're there to help us. They disguise themselves as normal people. They could disguise themselves as dogs or cats, you know, your pets at home. They don't have to have a human form. We don't know who they are. So we should allow for the fact that we're in a group that includes enlightened beings right now, right? And see ourselves as people lower than those enlightened beings. That's what this verse is about. Meaning we have to have some humility. His Holiness always does this. Whenever he's with a group of people, he automatically sees himself as the lowest being in that room. That may be hard to imagine, but that's what he does. He doesn't look like that to us, but that's the way he views himself. He's willing to learn. He's willing to put himself in our shoes so that he, with his advanced wisdom, knows how to help us. He knows exactly what to do. So we automatically, by now, you know, regard our teacher as a teacher, as an advanced being, you know, in the first part of the seven-part prayer, prostration. We've gone over the seven-part prayer. When you start your meditation in the morning, you do the seven-part prayer. You prostrate to your teacher, meaning that you think about a quality they have that you want for yourself. So you're automatically making yourself lower than them. He or she has it. I want it. Okay? That kind of thing. So when we begin to engage our lives in Lojong practice, we do it with other people. Some of them may be Buddhas. Likely, some of them are. We just don't know. They're not going to advertise it. No matter what we do, they're not going to advertise it. So these enlightened beings are here around us to help at all times. So we have to train ourselves to realize that. And we have to realize it constantly. You're walking down the sidewalk after you've bought yourself, this is summer, right? A nice gelato or something like that, which, oh, God, that's good. All these enlightened beings, you know, I wish I could give it to them, something like that. And always keep that in your mind, you know? And you might actually begin to think that way. And when you do, sort of like being in heaven, isn't it? Verse 3. As I go through the day, may I watch my mind to see if a negative thought has come. If it does, may I stop it right there with force, since it hurts myself and others. Like Lord Atisha, we need to develop constant awareness of the nature of our thoughts. And if a bad thought comes up, we stop it right then and there. If you haven't heard the story of Lord Atisha, he was invited to Tibet. He was Indian. He basically took the monastic tradition to Tibet. He wrote the first Lamrim, by the way, the Pabangka Rinpoche that amplified on it. But as he was traveling along, he was riding a donkey or maybe a yak. You can't ride yaks, they're too fat. Horse, something like that. As he was riding along the trail, a bad thought had come up. He said, oh, stop, you know. He'd get off, he'd take a stupa, put it on the side of the road, do prayers to purify that bad thought right then as it occurred. He wouldn't let it stay in his mind a minute longer. He'd get rid of it and purify the karma the bad karma that went along with that thought. It wouldn't have a chance to multiply at all. He'd just get rid of it. So we have to do things like that. I mean, the people traveling with him was a big joke. Okay, here we go again, you know. And they'd stop and they could get off their horses too and sort of rest their sore butts. You know, I don't think they were used to riding horses either. These bad thoughts probably occur several times an hour to us, even the little ones. They may even occur several times a minute. You'll have days where it's like that. Or it may be one long bad thought for 6 hours, even a little one, you know, it's just, the more you practice, the more you begin to notice this, and the more you can't stand it, and when you can't get rid of it, it's awful, you know, you can get physically sick even, and expect that to happen. You gotta fight it. You may not win, but you gotta fight it. So we have to stop the bad thoughts. Why? They are what kills us. If you've taken yoga or you've been to more of my classes, we've talked about the inner body, the system of channels that runs throughout our body that carries what we call winds along with them. There's one big main channel that runs about 2 centimeters behind here. It starts, it opens up, continues to the top of the head, and then runs down right in front of the spinal column, straight, down from the throat, the heart, the navel, and down to the secret place, which is your sexual organ. And then there are 2 side channels that kind of start the nostrils behind that. They curl up and follow the sides of that central channel going down. And down below the navel, they curl up and join the central channel. Those side channels contain our negative emotions, our mental afflictions. When we get angry or prideful or doubtful, but there are 5 main mental afflictions. The winds in those channels get very strong. They also wrap around the central channel. And when those emotions are strong, they close around the central channel and choke it off. And eventually they will close it. And when that happens, we die. So we can say it takes a lifetime for that to happen, you know, whether it's 2 days or 100 years, but that's what happens to us. It's because of these bad thoughts that we die. It has nothing to do with our genetic propensity or anything else. It's because of the bad thoughts. Why is it not genetics? Because we can change this into a light body. Think about that. Okay. Now, according to the last verse, we're in the company of all these enlightened beings, so they're there to help us. If we have a bad thought regarding an enlightened being, that bad karma is awful. It's much stronger. Even if we don't know they're enlightened, we have an impression in here that is going to be very strong bad karma. And if we spend our time being angry at enlightened beings, you can forget about reaching middle age. You'll just die. There's no other way. Mm-hmm. So we have to develop this habit of catching bad thoughts as soon as they arise and stopping them. Now, it's been popular in Western psychology to express our anger. Don't bottle it up. Express it. Let it come out. No, according to this. Diamond Lion says, forget that. Stop the bad thoughts right away. Now, that doesn't mean if we've had a horrible upbringing or something like that, where we're depressed. Depression is anger turned against yourself, really. We've got to do something about that, right? And, you know, so seeking psychological help is something that has to happen if that's where we are. I mean, the Tibetan lamas tell us that, you know, you really can't practice Dharma if you're messed up mentally. It just doesn't work. So get that taken care of. It doesn't mean, really, that you have to go to a psychologist. You could have a really good friend to work this out. There was a young man staying with me when I first got to Diamond Mountain. He was 21, and he was going through a horrible time. He basically spent his life pleasing his parents, mainly his father. But pleasing his parents, trying to be what they wanted him to be. And they did not hold back on what they wanted him to be. But it was all material and not like good character, you know. And it had eaten him to the point that he really couldn't function. And so we started talking about that. And I said, you know, you've got to let some of this stuff out. And he says, I don't want to get angry. I know what anger does. And I said, the anger's already been there. It hasn't been let out, you know. By letting it out, you're not going to create more bad karma. You know, you've just got to reach that. What really is wrong? And bless his heart, he just said, okay. You know, every afternoon at about 2 o'clock, he'd come in tears, you know, and we'd sit on the floor. I held him like a baby, you know, and then he just cried his stuff out, yelling, crying. You know, what somebody and I were talking about that, crying like a man, you know, like an adult, but you don't leak. You just boom, out like that. You got to be ready to do that. And there are places in these lojongs where they just, yeah, you know, you want to get rid of it? You got to get rid of it, but you got to know what it is to get rid of it. It's like that. Lama Zopa told us at a retreat I went to, which was a god-awful retreat. When you wash dirty laundry, the water gets dirty. So we're washing our minds. We're brainwashing, right? This is what we're doing. And all that stuff has to come out. A friend of mine, he was in the middle of a 3-year retreat when I joined the Dharma in 1993. I think. And I knew about it because in the Mandala magazine, I was in the FPNT, and they have a monthly magazine. Lama Zopa had visited them halfway through their retreat and then written an article about it. But I was talking to him later, and they started preparing for their three-year retreat. They were students of Lama Yeshe before he died. And he started them off in a series of 1 month to 3 month retreats. I think one of them was 6 months. And nine of them before they did the three-year retreat. And there was a series of four. They were 1 month retreat things. Lama Zopa never tells you what the retreat's about. You just go in and do it. I mean, the retreat I took with him, he didn't talk about it, you know. But it was to get rid of our major mental affliction, whoever was there. And it was very successful. But after one of these retreats, Roger was his name, said that he thought he was going crazy. He said the retreat must have had something to do with pride, because there was a little bit of that that came up in the retreat. But after, when they were out of the retreat, he was consumed by it. He thought he was going crazy. His partner, were they married? I think they were married. The thought he was too. She wasn't sure. She knew about the effects of the retreat and everything. He said Lama Zopa was totally unconcerned. And 6 weeks later, it was gone. Disappeared. It's that kind of thing. You can purify the negative, the mental afflictions, the negative emotions. You can do it. You have to do it. And you start by catching the bad thoughts. Okay. Verse 4. At times I will meet bad people, tormented by strong bad deeds and pain. They are hard to find, like a mine of gold. And so may I hold them dear. Are bad people really hard to find? Are they really hard to find? Are you sure? Where do bad people come from? Yeah. Okay. According to Master Shantideva, we get rid of bad people by treating people nicely. So, you know, you got somebody in the office that's a real jerk. Maybe your boss, you know. But you can kiss them goodbye as your practice develops. They'll just disappear. Change into nice people or move, you know, something like that. One of the, when we were touring in India with Geshe-la in 1999-2000 break, at a couple of places, Geshe-la would introduce doing the Six Times book. No, sorry, it was a purification practice, a fire puja, really, but done in a little coffee can, you know. And did we talk about that?
I think so.
We did? We can do that. Remind me if I don't sometime. So different students would go through this practice, and there was one woman who was telling us how to do it. And she said, you know, there's this guy at work who couldn't keep his hands off of me, even in the elevator. It was just always like this. And she'd tell him to stop, you know, baddies. He wouldn't do it. And she began to do the purification practice, which is 5 minutes, after she got home from work, on him, you know. And she said, he is the sweetest guy now. It wasn't him that changed, it was her. Even though it may not seem like it, but that's the kind of thing that you do. So we know that bad people come from us, and we've probably realized that we ourselves are bad people to others. I don't know if you've ever considered that, but it's true. Do you ever get mistaken for an asshole? Probably, right? I do. Not recently, though. So that's maybe one reason that bad people are hard to find. But you have to seek out difficult people in order to be able to change your heart, to develop love for them, for anybody, anytime. We have several people in Phoenix, Tucson, Sedona, who visit prisoners, who actually teach them. Started off teaching them yoga. But then they got permission at one of the facilities to do some ACR courses. Two of the prisoners want to be ordained. We don't know when that's going to happen because one of the two is absolutely not ready to be ordained. And he's sort of the leader of the group. And I don't know, the warden is very happy to have us there. Which is unusual too, because when we tried doing this to begin with, it was grudgingly that they let us in. They just thought it would disrupt everything. I remember there's a movie about women Buddhists, not Buddhists. Venerable Robina was in. Mm-hmm. She's been visiting prisoners for 20 years, something like that. Robina is about this tall. She's stocky. She knows Kung Fu. She was head over heels with men before she became a nun. Then she became a radical feminist. Then she became a radical lesbian. And then she got ordained. She's a fire plug, a really good friend. I've told you before, I have her boot marks on my butt to prove it. Very good friend. But there's this picture of her talking to prisoners. On death row, maybe? But the chaplain in the prison had to be with her. He was Baptist and wanted nothing to do. So the room they were in had a kind of a alcove and back, and he would be in the corner so he didn't have to look at her. You know, he didn't even want to do that. About halfway through the class, he's moved from the back to the front corner. And by the time the class is over, he's sitting in the middle of the audience. You know. She got to him as well. And this is what we learn how to do. And we can only do it if we ourselves reach out to them with love and compassion. It's the only way it can work. Developing the love and compassion is how we get to enlightenment. That's what these teachings are about. Okay. So this covers the first half of the 8 verses. We're going to do the second half tomorrow. We'll take a break and then come back and talk a little bit more about them, and we'll have some discussion groups too. So take a break.
10 minutes, 5 minutes?
10, whatever you need. Okay. You know, not 15. Not 15. Well, if you develop a good heart, you can take 15. So, if you have any questions, we can address those now. You all understood it perfectly, which is entirely possible. If not, then, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9. Divide into groups of 3. All right? Mm-hmm. And just start talking about these verses, what they mean to you, how you might apply them, any problems that you see with them. If you have problems or doubts about anything, you've got to clarify them in your mind. Is that a bodhisattva vow or a temperate vow? Well, it doesn't make a difference. I tell you, you have to clarify them. All right. Resolve doubts. Even if it takes 10 years, you've got to do that. So what do we do? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 works pretty well.
Könntet ihr online es untereinander diskutieren? Ich würde dann einfach bei mir einen Lautsprecher ausschalten, dass ich euch nicht höre. Dann müsstet ihr euch einfach entmuten, dann könnt ihr es praktisch untereinander diskutieren. Okay?
Gute Idee.
Or if there's somebody here you really don't like, put yourself in their group.
Du guckst mich so an.
Ich halte auch das, die Aufnahme an. Eure Diskussion ist dann nicht auf der Aufnahme.
George said it was. He lived in from 1054 to 1123. You may not think it's important to know that, and it might not be, but it's going to be in your homework. So at least write the dates down. Dorje Senge was a very high-level bodhisattva. He's been doing this for a long time, and a lot of lifetimes apparently too. The kind of instruction that the eight verses is, or most of the lojongs actually, they're called dhampa. Say dhampa.
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 Dhampa. Dhampa means religious advice, instruction, and usually one-on-one. Teacher tells it to a disciple. And that's why some of these were whispered. Secret, you know, given to a disciple. And the teacher would find the appropriate time to do that too. What do you do with this dhamma, with this instruction? You jong it. Now we said jong meant what? To purify. That's one of several meanings. It also means to practice, to study, for example. And it means, in addition to purify, to remove by cleaning, like washing. You know, you wash the dirty laundry, the dirt comes out, the water gets dirty. And in Lojong, the Jong has all three of those meanings. To study, learn, you know, practice, purify, and remove by cleaning. Remove by clean is a little bit different than purify, even though they amount to the same thing. But remove by cleaning means you have to do something. All right. What you do in the Lojong practice. So what exactly is this attitude that we're trying to develop through Lojong? We start with the idea, you know, which is familiar to you by now, that we're all in the same boat. We don't want to suffer. We want to be happy. And that's applied to all samsaric beings. Animals, they don't want to suffer, they want to be happy. Hungry ghosts, certainly, and they can't be happy, but they want to be, you know, which is why they suffer, because they can't be. And the hell beings, certainly, you know, they certainly don't want to be there. So we're all in the same boat. And the problem with us wanting to be happy is that, at least prior to beginning to practice Dharma, everything we do to make us happy guarantees that we're going to suffer more. That's just the nature of it. Last night I was going through Master Shanti Deva's thing, you know. Every suffering I experience comes from trying to make me happy. So that's kind of the nature of things. And this is what we're attacking in Lojong practice. How can we change our attitude? And we talked about exchanging self with others last night. And that's part of a Lojong practice too. It just turns up in the Master Shantideva's text, Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. So, you know, if this is true, why at least can't we be nice to each other? You know, we're all suffering. We're doing the wrong thing and don't know about it. You know, we don't see how trying to make us happy makes us suffer more and more. And the people around us too, probably. Because of our ignorance, the things come from the wrong side. We do things to other people to harm them to get what we want. Even if it's just little stuff. But we do this all the time. And we don't know it. So now we're beginning to figure out. So, you know, try to make other people happy. Why not help each other? And then, why don't we make this an automatic response instead of a chore? Oh, I've got to go see my old lady now. You know, she's going to help me find a partner. She's going to help me find a partner. Self, I'm thinking of me first, not the old lady. And the reason we're helping the old lady is to generate the causes to not be lonely. But at the lowest level, you know, finding a partner similar to us is going to speed us to enlightenment. So, I mean, at some level, yeah, we're being selfish about that. Why do we want to get enlightened? So we can help really help everybody else by leading them out of samsara and knowing how to do it. I mean, that's the true help. So it is kind of selfish, but we don't make that the reason we're doing it. We're doing it to help other people. We'll get to a part of a Lojong practice where we do all this in secret. We don't let people know what we're doing when we're helping them. We don't let the old lady know. You know, when you give some money to a beggar and learn how to do that with wisdom, you know, we don't let them know why we're doing it. And we don't tell other people, I'm a great giver, you know. We just don't do that. Everything is for everybody else's benefit, not our own. But by doing that, we'll get what we need and want. And no other way. And we're trying to put our mind so that that is just an automatic thought. We don't even think about it. We'll get to the point where we're just good people automatically. It's not something we have to do or try to do. Okay, I'm doing this now. Yeah, you'll do that when you start. That's absolutely right. But we're changing our minds to something else. So developing this attitude is what we call developing the good heart. That's the good heart. There's a wonderful book called, I think it's just called Good Heart. In the 90s, mid-90s maybe, His Holiness was invited to lead a annual conference by a group in the Catholic Church that was devoted to meditation. And they've got a name, and I don't remember what it was. But that's their thing, is meditation. And I think it's really developing their good heart, too. And every year they have some leader, usually Catholic, come and lead the conference for them. And this year they invited His Holiness to come. What that involved was him reading sections from the Gospels and then giving his take on them. In the Roman Catholic Church, as you know, the only person allowed to read from the Gospels is the priest. No, even, you know, lay people can go up and read from the rest of the New Testament, but not from the Gospels. So this was a radical departure from them, you know. And I think the first thing they asked him to read was, God so loved the world, you know, that he gave his only begotten Son. And His Holiness, he could read English, but he had to do this. So there's this picture of him doing this in kind of an even voice, and people starting to cry, you know. And the book about this is called The Good Heart. It's basically a transcription of those 3 days that that he was there. There was one really hilarious comment. His Holiness was telling a story about something, and he got to the punchline, and Dr. Jimpo was translating. He was still a monk at this point. Dr. Jimpo was translating, and His Holiness gave the punchline in Tibetan, and Dr. Jimpo began to laugh, and he couldn't stop laughing for about 5 minutes, and then he finally gave it. But the story was, there was a monk and some of his disciples in a monastery. And other monks took their disciples on picnics every so often. And these disciples asked, can we go on a picnic? Yeah, sometime, you know, later. We don't need to do it right now. Sometime. And so one day, this is after the disciples become teachers themselves, or close to it anyway. They're out, not on a picnic, but out someplace, and along the side of the road comes a procession of people. They're carrying a body on sticks to the burial ground. This was in India. And one of the younger monks asked this, you know, teacher, what are they doing? And the monk said, they're going on a picnic. The guy died. It was time for a picnic. Which must have said something about the relationship between His Holiness and Dr. Jimbo. I saw he was teaching in London, and a group from Italy went up. It was the 8-verse mind train. And His Holiness was going along on something, you know, and Dr. Jimbo was now in a suit. He turned in, what do they call it, given back his robes and his vows, monk's vows, and married. But he's still translated for His Holiness. And he was trying to translate something that His Holiness was saying, somebody who'd done something, and couldn't find the right English word. And His Holiness was up on his throne looking down. He said, ex-monk. And again, Dr. Jimba just fell over. I mean, we were all laughing so hard, you know, and His Holiness was chuckling, but just the look, that's absolute pure love, you know, for this man. He was just little twink. Yeah. Okay. So, developing the good heart, we want to be able to love everyone else equally, meaning great love. You know, having equanimity doesn't mean not caring about anybody. I mean, that's equal, you know. But it means you're madly, passionately in love with every being in the universe. It's that kind of, like His Holiness with, you know, with Dr. Jimba. It's just, you could even, you know, probably take a spoonful of it and put it in stuff. It was that intense. And that's what we want, you know? And so we set about changing our hearts to be able to do this. What happens? Enemies disappear. Friends appear, new friends, right? And we have all that we need, and we're happy when we develop the good heart. We don't need much, really. But doing the good things, helping other people, makes us happy. If we set as our goal the task of making other people happy, as long as we're doing that, we've achieved our goal. And we can be happy about that. You know, think how you feel when you finish a project or reach a milestone. 40 years old, 50 years old, 64 when I'm 64, something like that. Or 75, you know. Things like that. When you got your driver's license. So it's not an easy task. At the beginning, what we attack is our most prevalent mental affliction. That's not hard to do. It's painful, but it's not hard to do. We know what it is, or our friends will tell us what it is, right? Which is why it's important to have good friends, you know, with hard souls, boots, something like that. But when we have been practicing a while and gotten rid of some of those, that's when Lojong begins to be good for us, because we have to attack the subtle mental afflictions, and they're hard to find. I love movies. There's another great movie called The Legend of Bagger Vance. It's Matt Damon and Will Smith. And Matt Damon, this takes place and starts just before the Depression in the United States. And Matt Damon was a great young golfer, championship level golfer. And then World War II broke out and he decided to go, like everybody else, fight the war in Europe. His company is mainly, he's from Savannah and Georgia, and most of the people in his company are friends from Savannah, and they get wiped out in the battle. And he comes back a broken man, you know. Well, the Depression hits, and there's got to be a golf tournament. You can watch the movie for that. But this little kid, 12-year-old, 11-year-old maybe, says, you know, this guy could do, he played golf, you know, I'll go find him. And he's become a recluse, and he goes to the house where this guy lived, and there's nobody in the house. But there's some noise out back, and he goes into the stables, and there's, I don't know, five men sitting there playing poker, drinking beer, and Matt Damon's one of them. And he said, yeah, kid, what do you want? And he says, well, there's this golf tournament going, and you're going to play in it. I'm not going to, you know. And he said, yeah, you are. You know, I mean, you're good, you know. And he's got this bottle, and the kid was going to say, you're drunk, you know. And Matt, but he catches himself, and Matt Damon says, you're going to tell me I'm drunk, right? Yeah. And Matt Damon goes off and thinks, well, you know, getting drunk, there's a whole bunch of things. And we got billions of brain cells. You drink and you kill 1,000 brain cells, you know, and the first thing to go when he goes through this list. And then he gets down to the memory cells, and he said, those memory cells, there are sons of bitches to get rid of. There's not enough alcohol to get rid of. So it's like, you know, the very subtle stuff we have. It's hard to get rid of. You really got to look at it. And the Lojong is addressed at those. You know, we talk about some of the big things like anger and whatever. And by the time you reach this, you probably conquered a lot of that, or at least know what to do when the time comes. Okay. And I think that's it. So we'll continue with the other four verses, the four verses tomorrow morning. And then we'll do a new Lojong in the afternoon. Vows. All of you here have had the vows you need, right? Mm-hmm. Or want to take Bodhisattva? Anybody need new Bodhisattva vows? Refuge? Lifetime? So we'll retake the Bodhisattva vows Sunday afternoon. Okay? It won't be very long. And since you've already had them and probably taken them several times afterwards, it'll be short, powerful, and sweet.
Sashi Fuki Chuxing Le Tokram Rira Ling Xing Ling De Yen Bai Sangye Xing Yu Mikke Ulvargi Roku Nam Dak Xing La Shuparsho Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamir Yatayami Iwadi Kirvokun Sunam Yeshe Chok Chok Shin Sunam Yeshe Le Jung Rin Rampakun Yi Chok Parshon.